Downloading.
Downloading.
Audio.
Nonstop.
Thanks for downloading the SOS Radio podcast.
We're talking about healing marriages when we're hurt with author Tina Konkin on SOS Radio. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Scott.
So, Tina, you've been a professional marriage counselor for over 25 years and spent years upon years counseling couples through infidelity and loss and conflict, but never really expected that you would have to deal with that in your own marriage.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like the shoemaker with holes in my shoes.
So share your story with us, Tina.
The question I think I get asked the most is, does this kind of stuff happen, like infidelity specifically, to good marriages? And I got to say, Scott, like, at that time in our lives, it was about 14 years into our marriage, we really did have a good marriage. It was not a troublesome marriage. We were both in ministry, healing marriages. So it came really and blindsided us. And I remember thinking, this had happened 5 years ago. I could have seen it. I could have even made sense of it, but not right now. Like, it literally was the best year in our ministry, in our lives, and our kids were kind of, you know, past the age of needing us full time, and it was just a good time. But this is where it gets weird. It was a good time, yet it was a time that was different. So it was a different season. And sometimes seasons, when they hit you and you're not prepared for them and you don't know how to handle it, it can throw you off kilter. And that's what happened. My husband's mom suddenly diagnosed with, you know, stage 4 cancer, and she didn't have long to live. He was the baby of the family. My husband, if you knew him, was sort of a happy-go-lucky, God is good and life is good, and you just handle the punches as they come. So I was never used to my husband being depressed or isolating, anything like that. And all of a sudden, I started seeing a different side of Ron that I'd not seen before. And unfortunately for me, I didn't know how to handle it. As a matter of fact, so much so that I asked my friend, would she mind being there for him? Because she had lost both her parents, and I'd not had that happen to me. So I just asked her to be there. Big mistake.
Now, Tina, you wrote a book called How God Used the Other Woman, Saving Your Marriage After Infidelity. So I want to hear the rest of this story.
Yeah, so I really do give credit to that, in the sense of not giving credit to an affair, not giving credit to the other woman. I really want to give credit to God for taking one of the worst situations that could have been, and that usually destroys marriages, and turning it into a story of healing. And that's what happened to us. For me, I think the worst three words that were ever used in my marriage were those three words, it is true. And that was when I'd gotten a call saying, your husband's having an affair. And I just went, no, not my husband. Are you crazy? You know, in total shock. And it was at a time where my husband was out of town visiting his dad after his mom's death. And I called him and I said, I just got the weirdest call, and I'm just baffled by this. And I said, is it possible that this is true? And he said, it is true. Those three words just hit me like it was like a tornado or a hurricane. I mean, all of it, you know. And I remember going to bed that night, and I woke up the next morning, and as I went into the bathroom, I looked at my face, and I knew I couldn't have slept. My face was that face of the morning after an ugly cry, and it was swollen. My eyes were bloodshot. I mean, it was ugly. And I looked, and all I could do was look up and say, God, why? How? How could this have happened to us? You know who we are, God? Like, could this be possible? And it was just one of those moments that, you know, I started crying again, and I just went, this can't be happening. This has got to be a nightmare. And all of a sudden, a voice out of the mirror looking back at me just said, Tina, stop crying. Ask yourself what part you played in this.
Wow.
And I just went, sorry, what? You know, and it was like this inner voice in my head. And I'm going like, okay, this has got to be wrong. And I've been a Christian a long time. And so I just sort of went, this has got to be the enemy for sure. You know, I would start praying against that voice. And all of a sudden I knew it wasn't. And I thought, God, like, really? Do you know I'm the victim here? And it was in that moment that all of a sudden my sadness. The ugly cry stopped. And instead of asking why, I just went, really? If this can be you speaking to me, then you must know why, because I don't. I don't know what part I've played in this. And, you know, there's been some criticism on that, because I certainly don't want people to hear me saying that the person that is betrayed had anything to do with the actual affair. Because we do not, as women or men that have been hurt or betrayed, take responsibility for what the choices of those that have betrayed you have made. Those were their choices. I don't take responsibility for that. And as being marriage counselors and having worked in workshops and conference speakers, very often had said, if this is going to work, the person who has done this has got to take responsibility. We never put the responsibility on the person that was hurt. So it was so against everything I believed, but I knew it was God. And that's what was perplexing me. And I said, okay, all of a sudden I get angry. And I just say, God, if you think I had something to do with this, then show me. So I don't want to tell too much more of there, but he did. He really did show me what my part was. And it definitely had nothing to do with the affair. It had to do with what we brought into our relationship before the affair happened. See, I could take responsibility for, I call them the rocks or the hardness of the heart. So in Matthew 19:8, this is where we discovered one of the most, what we've built our seminars on today, what we've built our conferences on, our healing weekend. We have built it on that one verse in Matthew 19:8, where Jesus says, because of the hardness of the heart, Moses allowed divorce. But it wasn't so in the beginning. When I was able to look at that and I say, God, I'm prepared to let you show me the hardness of my heart, that now has brought us here, and he was faithful and good. And I've got to tell you, Scott, just with that one revelation in the scriptures, we have healed literally thousands of marriages today because of that. Recognizing that each one of us don't just end up in an affair. For those of, that have ended up in an affair, those that have suffered from infidelity, you didn't just get there today. It wasn't a 30-second decision. This was the hardness of the heart. And quite often the hardness of the heart sets in long before the marriage ever was on the table. It can often come from our childhood and our adolescence. And we bring things to our relationships. And I call them the rocks that we bring in. And it could be anger. It could be withdrawal. It could be addiction. All those things harden our hearts. And all those things have to do with us trying to escape reality. It was a time in Ron's life and our marriage that he was trying to escape the reality of his mom dying. He wasn't handling it. He didn't think it was fair. It was sudden. There was no, she was healthy. And it was the first real death for him that was a close death, you know? So while he was at his worst point, I wasn't there.
We're talking about learning to trust again on SOS Radio with marriage counselor Tina Konkin. How do you rebuild after you get to a place where there's infidelity in your marriage? And obviously you want to rebuild your trust, but it's like you have to learn to trust again.
Yes. And trust is a huge word, because that was what people, even spiritual leaders, were saying, you know, how will you trust again? And that's huge, you know, and that was my dilemma. It really was, because it was, God, how will I trust again? How will I trust it won't happen again if we start to rebuild? And then all of a sudden, and that happens, people do, they think they can rebuild, but then they don't actually do the work, right? They just say, okay, this happened. You know, we just need to get past it. We've got to believe God, but then they don't do the work. And so you can't rebuild safety in your marriage. And so I changed that word trust to safety. This was a gnawing question in my mind, and I couldn't answer it when people asked, whether they were close friends or spiritual leaders. I couldn't answer. I'd say, I don't know, because I'd never had a trust issue before in that area in our marriage. And I remember going to church one Sunday morning, and how important spiritual counselors are, or spiritual responders, or, you know, people that God sets up just at the right time. And I share about you know, watch for God. And I remember Ron didn't want to go to church. He was too ashamed and he just didn't want to go. And that morning I just felt I had to go. But I didn't want to sit in our normal seat, you know, where everybody knows you're sitting. And I didn't want to walk in at the same time as everybody. So I went 15 minutes late. I had a hoodie on and I sat in the very back row. And the minister was just about to start preaching. And he was, you know, maybe 10 minutes into his message. And all of a sudden he stopped and he said, listen, this has nothing to do with my message. As a matter of fact, I can't even tell you what it has to do with anything. But I'm prompted and it's not leaving me to say this to you. God never asked you to trust people. He told us to trust God and love people. And I just went, oh my. And I got up and I left. And I said, that's my answer. This marriage is going to be rebuilt because of the love we have one for another. That's what's going to cover the multitude of sins. That's what's going to get rid of the hardness of the heart, is if we choose to create a safe relationship and create love, you know, that works, and not the baggage that we've brought in. I'd brought in a lot of baggage into my marriage, and one of them was a vow that I'd made that I would never nurture a man, because earlier in my life, before I ever met my husband, I had someone that I really, really loved die at the age of 25. I was thinking he was going to be my husband. And instead, I watched him die for a year and I nurtured. And that was it. I said, I will never do that again. So when my husband got into pain, that vow, without me really knowing it, and that's what God showed me when he said, what part did you play in it? And I saw it. I saw I wasn't there. When things got emotionally, someone was hurting, even my kids. My kids knew not to come to me if they were hurting. They went to their dad. You know, so it's really about examining your heart when it comes to infidelity or any relationship struggles. It's about examining yourself and saying, what have I brought into this marriage that has caused hardness of heart? Have I brought in anger? And that's what comes out when there's a confrontation or when there's a conflict. What have I used in the past to escape reality? Because that's what an affair is. It's an escape. That's what drugs are. They're an escape. That's what anger is. It's an escape. It gets you out of your immediate trigger that you can't handle. And you learned that somewhere and you didn't learn it in your marriage.
We're talking with Tina Konkin today on SOS Radio, and she's a professional marriage counselor. When it comes to second marriages, Tina, when you have kids from a previous marriage, you know, what's the best way to set up a strategy so your kids are protected, but you start your marriage on a strong foundation with a new spouse? That is so complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's so complicated. And yet I've seen it succeed. We've been doing for over 25 years now. We were counselors, and then we decided, you know what, this is a slow road. And when people are at 911, like when they feel like, okay, it's do or die, this marriage isn't going to work. And especially in second marriages where it's blended families, what ends up not working is counseling quite often, because it's like having a heart attack and then trying to eat right. You know, you got to handle the heart attack first, right? And then go on a good maintenance program. And so we started doing our 3-4 day intensive programs. It's about 35 to 40 hours. And people will come into that broken, and we're a big resource for a lot of churches and a lot of counseling firms, because we're called the detox. We're called that triage. And so they'll come in to that, and especially second marriages, because quite often blended families, how do you not hurt the kids? They didn't ask for this. They weren't part of the decision to get a divorce and then remarriage. And so I always say in those cases, in first marriages, I always say the husband and the wife are first. You know, it's like God first, then your marriage, then your children. I reverse it a little bit when it's blended. I always say, let's do the best for the kids first, because they didn't have a choice in this. And so what do I mean by that? I mean that that parent that is not their biological parent really has to earn that trust with the child. You know, you can't just say, respect him because he's your father, because he's not. So it really is about making sure that as a couple, the children aren't on a back burner. And that as a couple, if you choose this, everybody's on board. I've said to couples, I said, would you consider, especially if they're adolescents, if they're younger, it's not as bad. But once they're adolescents and going into teenage years, those are rough years anyways. You know, so when you bring in another man or another woman at that point, it makes it even tougher. So I really do suggest that people will follow counsel and include the kids in the counsel to create a safe home so that the kids are part of that process. So I've seen a lot of blended families go through our program and really succeed and come in as a family, because once they're teenagers, they can come into the Relationship Lifeline program and work together. And then there's a blending of the family. You know, I think a lot of step-parents just expect respect. And yet, why? Why should they respect you? You know, what is there to be respected? And quite often, because I'm her husband. Well, you weren't her husband. You weren't his wife. So it's really a tough pill to swallow. But I've seen it work really well. And that's why you take a 50% divorce rate across the nation and it jumps up to 72% right away in second marriages. And it's usually because it involves children, you know. As a matter of fact, some of the churches that do support us and use us as a resource will basically ask couples to do the program together before they'll remarry them.
That's good. What's your website, Tina?
It's Relationship Lifeline. Org.
We're talking to Tina Konkin today at SWS Radio, and she's a marriage counselor, and she wrote a book called How God Used the Other Woman, Saving Your Marriage After Fidelity. Anything else you want to mention before we jump off, Tina?
Well, I hope that couples will not jump to the conclusion that they have the biblical right, but that they'll look at the hardness of their heart. And throughout our counsel, we always talk about the R3 program. And the R3 is really steps that we take you through of reveal, rewrite, renew. Every marriage can be renewed if people will just look at their own hardness of heart.
You're clear to go. Thanks for downloading the SOS Radio podcast. If you enjoy the discussion, give it a 5-star rating in your app store.
The way the technology works, your ratings really help spread the word.